In the following conversation, I sat down with Kari from the Finnish company Eke Electronics. Kari is Vice President of Product and R&D, and together with his team, he develops smart train technology. When talking about modern means of sustainable mobility, I feel that trains and their potential are widely overlooked. Therefore, let's talk more about trains. Enjoy listening. Let's jump right into it. Kari, what are you building?
Well, I work in a company called Eke Electronics, which is a world-leading train control and monitoring system provider. We supply products all over the world. It actually collects the data from the train and delivers the data to the train, controls different operations, saloon lights, doorbells, you know, all kind of things, but also safety critical part, like monitoring the tilt of the train so that it is not vibrating too heavily, and then the driver can actually then reduce the speed and so on. There's a lot of we have in a portfolio about 25 different safety functions. In addition, we do our own hardware. So basically the platform is built by Eke. And we have a history of 30 years of doing this thing. So we are not kind of new in the market. Then the latest add-on to our system is called Smart Vision. And the Smart Vision is a cloud system which collects the data from our systems and processes that for preventive maintenance. So it will diagnose the train, how it is actually behaving, and then seeing that, okay, when the train is put to the maintenance, you can look from the Smart Vision system what else you should actually do at the same time when you have a service break. We have also Smart Vision function, which is called intelligent track monitoring. So in the bogies of the train, we have a vibration sensors, 6 freedom of axis, and it is monitoring how it is actually vibrating. And it can detect, for example, a probe switch or the board, which is called, I actually don't know in English what it is, the thing, which is, it's, I think it's ballast, where the tracks are connected. And it can detect it, broken ballasts, so that you can actually go and pinpoint when the train goes there, it sends data there is a problem. And then you can go there later on and pinpoint that, okay, the problem in the track is there. And there are a couple of companies in the world who do this thing, but we are the only one who do it actually on board, so that we actually do it in so that the couple of locomotives have this system so that they can record the data and analyze that in the cloud. So that's what I do in Eke.
When I get it right, you are building smart trains.
Yeah.
When people talk about modern means of mobility today, I have the feeling that nobody talks about trains. All talk is about the fancy stuff like self-driving cars, scooters, electric vehicles. But a train is such a great product. It can run on green energy. It's ride sharing. It's sustainable. It's also a very lasting product. What is the longevity of a train?
And our hardware is built for reliability. Most of our customers requires a design life of 30 years. And 30 years means that you have to be quite careful, because you are responsible of servicing and maintaining it and making sure that it works. So basically, almost all systems we have only one component that needs to have a service. And they are power supplies, because power supplies have a condensators, and condensators will dry up. And then usually every 15 years, you have to replace them. Either you replace the whole thing, or then you are just kind of putting a new components in, whichever is more cost effective for the customer. Well, if you think about the average service life of a fleet, let's take the Central Line in London. The underground thing. It was released in 92, and it's still running the hardware that we put in there in that time, and now we are renewing it. And it is now like 32 years old, and it's going to be have a still service life of 20 years after this. So they run the fleet about 60 years. We are working with Bakerloo line at the moment, and it was built in 72. And it's going to run at least next 12 years. So it means that the train is definitely sustainable, because once they are built, then of course, yeah, it's a big investment and you want to get return for your money.
That feels so different to other modern products we are using. Many modern products we use are outdated fast. You can't repair it. My iPhone 11 is already really outdated. It's, I think, from 2019, and it feels so old. It's very much a throwaway mentality, I think, we have. And this is very sad.
Even though I like Apple and all those products which are in the market, I hate that that humankind is so stupid that we make products that are throwaway. I think the European Union should make a legislation that you can't make a product that you can't repair. That's the only way to have a sustainable future. For example, I had the example, and it's totally out of kind of this conversation, but we had a refrigerator. We bought two of them because you have to get them in pairs. My wife's looking, they want to have this different. They can't be different. You know that. And the thing is that the other one had a failure in the thermostat. So there was inside of the foam somewhere, just a small thermistor, and it couldn't be replaced. So the whole thing needed to be replaced in the warranty time, rather than just kind of having a tube inside of the thing where you can actually switch it. And so of course, it is manufacturability is better in that way, but serviceability is nothing. And I, as I said, that we should kind of wake up and make sure that products need to be kind of replaceable and serviceable. Of course, in Apple, for example, the display now in new MacBook, if it breaks down, you have to change the whole thing. Okay, I understand the product design, that it looks nice and thin and whatever, but still, people actually should look further about the usability because of our natural resources are not limitless.
Let's talk about another challenge you have when building mobility products, which means bringing hardware and software together, because mobility without hardware, it's not possible. Could you elaborate a little on how do you do that?
In early days, we were that company that makes everything by ourselves. And if it wasn't invented here, it wasn't good enough. We have get over of that thing. So we have now third-party products also in our portfolio. But because of the volumes our products are, we need to look really what is the production cost. Because if we buy the product from the other manufacturer, of course, the margins are different. So we need to look at the business aspect. And certain components, it just makes sense to do. However, even we are producing the hardware and making systems which are hardware systems, Eke considers to be a software company, because the hardware doesn't do anything without the software. And we have a number of software engineers and different teams. And you mentioned earlier, we are using agile methods and so on to build our software. But mostly the thing is that we have a platform. It's our TMS base, we call it. And we have the platform. And then the platform is configurable certain aspect and certain things you have to just build your new coding. And then we have the heart of the system is, of course, like in every manufacturer in this industry, is PLC. So programmable logic controller, which is made also from software. And it has a certain standard programming language or block programming language. You do it graphically or you can do it by using the language itself. And then you can build the application of the train. And we have a building blocks that are connected to this system, so that then the engineer that actually knows how the train should work will actually combine these building blocks to actually make it work and build the application for the train. And then there are other software layers. There are different layers, the application layer, but then there are kind of the middleware or transportation layer where the data is to, and data storage and all, like in any computing system. And then there are the driver layer where you have an interface of different systems. And usually those different systems, you have to build your own software interfacing to them because they are so specific. And sometimes they are also very archaic.
Building software, you have to build lots of prototypes to see if things are working as you imagined that they work. And in software, it's cheaper and easier than in hardware.
Yeah.
How do you do it with train?
Well, first of all, almost all projects that we deliver, we have a prototype lab where we have the whole system in reasonable extent. And for example, if you have an 8-car train, we have almost the whole hardware in place so that we actually can test the hardware, because going in a train is really expensive and it's labor intensive. And so basically we built the systems in the lab in a certain extent and test it there. And comparing to many other companies, we have invested a heavy amount of automated testing. And you know, when you have a system, you have buttons and you have cloud connections and you have all kind of interfaces, it's very difficult to actually build those test automations, but it pays off in the long run. Because whenever you modify the software, you think that you have to test everything because the reliability is one of the important things. You just do the smoke testing and whatever testing you need to do, and you can be sure that when you install that in a train, you can do a certain set of testing. What comes to the new parts of the system, as you mentioned, that how we do it, it's basically if we have to build a hardware part, we will integrate that on this the whole test rig that we have and integrate that as a new module, a new software. It's nothing like rocket science. It's more like an R&D project rather than application project for delivering the existing building blocks, if I answered your question.
It's really interesting. And also, how does the lab look like? So when you have the lab, does that mean you have somewhere a train, a track system?
Yeah, well, in our lab, there's no train. It's really, really the hardware that will go into the train. And then when we have a delivery project, the customer have a test train. So they have taken, even it's a new build, it's totally new, or it's a train that we repurpose, and they are actually withdrawn from the service, and we installed, actually we don't install, a customer install those things there. And then we just do the commissioning. So we make sure that the system works in a train in the way how it actually works also in the lab. But there are also a certain amount of things that you can't test in the lab because you just can't bring all the equipment that you have in a train. For example, train radios are very common that you just can't get them. And they don't work even in Finland. So why you put the thing, because it's your interface. But many other train board equipment, for example, speedometers and those things, we can actually have in a lab so that we actually can see that they are working properly.
So in the mobility industry, you have a high need for cybersecurity because you transport people, you have a smart system, which means you're open to the internet or some kind of network. How do you deal with the topic of cybersecurity?
It is something that I have been doing software industry like, well, 20 years on software. And the cybersecurity is something similar as the user experience. So if you think about that, you make a software and then somebody says that this is very difficult to use. Then somebody says that make it usable. But if you haven't designed it from grounds up a usable, it's not going to be usable. You might make a user interface uplift and facelift and so on, but it's never going to be kind of usable if you haven't done. And cybersecurity is the same thing. The coding standard within the company, and there are actually standards also in our industry, how we should actually program and so on. It must be inherent inside of the programming code of practice. And that's what we do not have any specific cybersecurity expert. Of course, we have our CTO, which is very, very, very well endorsing the thing. But it's more like the industry and way of working that needs to be handled in that way. Like anything, for example, when we do the safety integrity level, it's certain procedures, certain documents, certain certifications, everything need to be done in exact way in order to make a safe system. And it's basically the same for the cybersecurity. But cybersecurity you don't certify, but the application you do.
And there's lots of technology in the train. And when we talk about smart train, and there will be the question coming up, are trains autonomous already?
Yes, there are quite a lot of autonomous train, but they are usually in very restricted things. In a passenger things, it's not that common. You can see them in airports and in kind of limited areas, but it's not a mainstream at the moment. But I wouldn't see that why it wouldn't be that a train operator is going to be a profession that will disappear in the long run, because the more safety systems you put in the train, the less you actually driver need to do anything nowadays. One example about going in the direction of the automated driving is so-called assisted ASDO system, assisted selective door opening. And that is a system, especially in UK, where the trains have become longer and longer. You need to have a safety system that when the driver is enabling the doors in the platform, the train knows that it can't enable the doors on outside of the platform, because the train is shorter than longer than the broad platform. And this is kind of the intelligence that helps the driver not actually to be worried about that what is the safety, because its safety is taken up by the system. And more similar systems will appear, like there is a cameras in all the doors, so that driver actually looks from that. You don't have to have anyone in platform to make sure that you can close the door safely. And then the next step is that the train closes the doors by themselves, so that they know that, okay, this is now safe. And more that kind of systems will be added. But then, of course, there are other area of the thing which is driving the train itself. And that's something that I'm pretty sure that it will come. But at the moment, I think it is quite limited. For example, in Helsinki Metro, it was actually planned to be driverless. And they ended up put the drivers there. And the anecdote is that the places where the drivers have rest places and changing, they don't have toilets there because they were not supposed to have drivers.
At least I think the job of the drivers are going to change a lot, because it's not driving, it's observing.
Yeah.
Is there anything like a tool, a method, a process, a technology which was really helpful for you?
Well, I would say that changing us to agile working ways of working was really helpful. We tend to work in the way that we didn't have teams. We have we have a group of specialists working in their own dormitories or whatever you can call them, and then getting together so that now when we are working as a teams and the teams are dedicated to certain customer, it's much more effective than working in the previous way where the team didn't have a customer focus, so they were kind of alienated from the customer relationship. And now we have a much more intimate relationship with our customers, with those teams, and it's not basically the agile thing, but it's basically the teamwork that has been kind of improved our productivity and of course job satisfaction amongst the engineers as well.
What are the leading countries in regards of smart train technology?
If we look from making the smart trains in general, China is definitely the one. I think they have even 12 train universities there. So in that sense, yes. But from the technological advancement point of view, there is not a single country that is over the others, except, of course, Finland and Eke. No, we are not making trains itself.
And when you say train university in China, what does that mean? Is it really studying train tech?
Yeah, the train technologies and trains itself. So that how to build them, how to operate them, how to build tracks and all that infrastructure. They are teaching that in specific trades.
Wow. Didn't know that. Yeah. Interesting. Do we have something comparable in Europe or something that you can study?
No, we
something
just have
like
engineering
that?
And the people are just specialized to work in certain companies, but not in any way in Europe. We have a more like a generic engineering training and disciplines, and they are then applied. And the more and more, as I spoke before, it's about software. So. And more we need the skillful software engineers.
It's a little like what we see in the automotive industry. So at the beginning, all the big automotive manufacturers, they were laughing when Tesla did something, and they just thought that Tesla is this kind of little player and they have no chance at all. And now it seems like they all try to do the same thing. But Tesla started with the software and then adapted everything to the software, not the other way around. And it feels like this is the general challenge, maybe also with smart trains.
Well, in general, in the car industry, you are totally right. The other companies are so lacking, so behind about the software itself. Tesla did to automotive industry same as iPhone did to the mobile phone industry. So that everybody needs to actually start building that kind of products. But in a smart train, I think the thing is that the standardization work that works there is doing so that the competition or the companies are moving forward in the same pace. So there is no something that somebody comes with a superior technology, because there's also the thing that if somebody makes something superior, it's also more expensive. So that's why the standardization in the industry is actually bringing up solutions where the companies can then kind of compete against each other, building that kind of systems. And it's a little bit different than for example, for automotive industry, where you are competing with consumers' attention. We are competing the attention of the train manufacturers, and they have a different factors because it's business to business.
So how do you handle stress? Because this is something I see with everyone. Yeah. We all seem to be really stressed out. Is there any routine or anything how you handle stress?
Well, that's an interesting question. I have always said this thing to people who worried about stress. And I said that there's a much more pleasure way to kill yourself than work. So I have a philosophy that first of all, you can't do more than you can do. So whatever is in your backlog, it's there. And if you just make sure that you do the most important things first and that order, what else you can do? Really, it's like a zen of of thinking about your own capability, and don't even think about that you can do more than you can do, because you can't. And this is the same philosophy that sometimes when you make a software, I have been consulting many companies and been working many companies, they were saying that, can this software teams make this thing faster? No, they can't make it any faster. You can't plan it faster than their best effort. You just have to make sure that they make right things. And same applies to individuals. But some people will not actually understand that they have a limits, but they have to kind of honor and be it like that. And nobody will punish you if you can't do more than you can do. You need to understand that. And I don't actually have that much stress. So even though I have a lot of things to do, but very rarely I actually take stress about the work. And I have also been working for many, many years in a long project. And when you look from him side, there has never been hurry, never. When you look, when things are ready, they are ready. And when you look at that, we have to make this thing very quickly and so on. There are, of course, timely things that you need to do, that you need to do very quickly, that this time you have to make this testing. And you need to make effort that you have everything ready. But it doesn't mean that you are in a hurry, in a sense, when you look backwards. But when you are reaching the deadline, you have an illusion that you are in a hurry. But you actually are not when you look after the thing that happened. And if it is 2 days late and you did it, nobody will actually come when the project is ready to say you that you were late.
Yeah, I just read somewhere a post which says nobody will remember that you worked late except your kids.
Yes, that's very true.
What inspires you at the moment? Is there anything what you read, you watch, any people you're following, which are for you inspiring?
I am kind of engineer in my heart, and doing things with technology is something that, and lately my inspiration has been building machines. I have built, maybe you can see over there, is a 3D printer.
Nice.
And I have built CNC machines and software for them and so on. So basically tinkering that kind of things, even you don't use them much for anything else than just knowing that you can learn something. So learning new is very inspirational for me. And then what comes other thing is that I actually lately have really loved to listen books, different books, usually something which are related on the technology, so that there's an explanation about the cosmos and things, you know, that kind of things, and meaning of life and so on. But now I actually have found a totally area which is the crime novels. I just didn't know that I like them so much. And my favorite author is Joel Nesbø, the Norwegian guy, for this Harry Hole book series. And I recommend that if you want to have a plots that are complex and unpredictable, this guy really has them.
Sounds good. Yeah, this is sometimes the challenge, right? They're really predictable. You already know what's going to happen after 20 pages.
The butler is the killer.
Yeah, exactly. It's always the same thing. Okay, then last question. Is there anything the people who are listening can do in order to support you or Eke?
Definitely, yes. If you are the listener and you are an engineer, make a free application to us.
Awesome. What kind of engineers you're looking for?
Software engineers, any trade. Backend, front-end, C block programmers, PLC programmers, any trade of who actually done embedded software is our target group.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time. It was really great talking with you.
Likewise. Thank you.